Well, the Library of Congress is the world's largest storehouse of knowledge and information under one roof. We've been collecting universally for about 200 years, and when I say that, I mean on every conceivable topic, in virtually every language ever spoken. I shouldn't say that. It's about 470 languages. And we have a particular interest in history and culture, and this fits very much right in with that. You know, people like to talk about the sort of frivolous or mundane details that are in there about you know, how people are feeling at work and what music they're listening to or what they had for their last meal. But that notwithstanding, there is a lot of historical importance and relevance in there. And in fact, in many ways in which Twitter has affected history, such as the protests in Iran or a journalist who was kidnapped in Egypt, taken as a prisoner, and was later released because of what ended up on the Twitter sphere. So there is historical relevance. There is a great deal that can be learned about how people viewed society at a particular time in history. These are from people who were actual participants in events as well as observers of these events. So we think it will be of great value to future historians and people who have an interest in how we lived our lives at this time. And it's no different in our minds than letters that we collected, for instance, from Civil War soldiers back to the home front, or journals that we have, or papers that we have from notable individuals in our manuscript division. These are firsthand accounts of history, and it's important that we document these because websites do come and they do go. I'm not saying that Twitter might come or go, but there is a large loss of data on the internet that I don't think people think about, and this is about digital preservation.
Yeah. Remember Friendster a couple years ago, where that was a hot thing and everyone thought that was going to be wherever, and there is a historical significance. What's a reaction that you've gotten from folks? I mean, a lot of reaction on Twitter, of course, but even Amy Morris at one point said, hold on, is this going to be, are people tracking me? I mean, it almost, we got into a discussion. These are public, you're posting in a public way, so this isn't doing anything odd out there.
Well, they are. The reaction from what I've seen, both on blogs and in Twitter. In fact, the day we went out with this, I set up a Twitter fall in my office, which is basically anyone commenting on this pops up on my screen. And I was just watching the flow from time to time and seeing what people were saying. It was largely positive. I think people do understand that this is about posterity and that there's a great value in this. And I think there's even a little bit of pride that people will, yes, indeed, become part of the Library of Congress collections and that they are contributing to that. Some people have been concerned about privacy, but I would point out, as you said, that people agree to terms of service that say anything that they submit or post will be viewed by other users and through third-party services and websites, and that people need to ensure that they're comfortable with what they're sharing under these terms. Now, people have always had the option of setting their feeds as private, and they can pass direct messages from user to user privately, and these will not become part of that archive. Mm-hmm. And we have an impeccable record of data storage, retrieval, and security here, and we are going to continue that to our utmost with this collection.
And one of the things that your post does is, and we'll have a link to it on federalnewsradio.com, but it really talks about, you know, everyone, I think, thinks of the Library of Congress as just books, but you've been collecting material, presidential campaign websites. There's a lot of digital material that you've been collecting for a long time.
Well, and in the traditional information world, books are one quarter of our collections. The rest of it is prints and photographs, sound recordings, movies, maps, manuscripts, newspapers and periodicals, comic books even, baseball cards. So many things that people might not associate with the library or their national library. So we've been collecting in many different formats, and within the past 10 years, we have had a mandate from Congress to preserve what we can, which is what we call born digital. So these are websites And actually, we've also been leading a national partnership called, very long name, called the National Digital Information Infrastructure and Preservation Program, which works with 130 partners to preserve other kinds of data, such as geospatial data, state government records, public broadcasting, and the like. So this is something that the library is mandated to do on our own. We have already archived 167 terabytes of born digital content, primarily through the web capture program. The Twitter archive represents a little bit less than 5 terabytes. And, you know, consumers often today will buy a 1 terabyte hard drive for their computer. So that gives you a sense of how much information this is.
Give me a sense, because you mentioned that there are technical details that you're working out with Twitter, and also some policy issues that you're working out. Talk a little bit about what some of those are.
Well, technical issues are just simply the handoff and how that workflow is going to be maintained, and obviously security issues and, you know, ensuring that the content we get does not include any of the private content, so that is all sequestered and taken out of the system. Policy issues, I think, in particular, we've been discussing internally even before the Twitter acquisition, issues of access to digital collections. Our traditional model has been you come into the library, you go into a reading room, you request a book or another item, and it's delivered to you. And we are not a circulating library, but, you know, because of the collections we have, a lot of times we're viewed as a library of last resort, so we have to maintain the collections here. Obviously, with digital collections, there are many different considerations to take into account. The fact that they are very easily copied, very easily moved from one place to another. I shouldn't say very easily, you know, if you have the right encryption and so forth. But they are definitely a beast of another nature, and that's something that we're trying to deal with. And how do you serve these up? What is the user interface? How easily can researchers slice and dice that data? And the nice thing about Twitter is that because it's coming to us directly, we will have, I think, a much greater ability to enhance access to this. We already have scientists and, for instance, graduate students that we're working with at Stanford who are interested in developing new discovery tools and setting up algorithms that will allow people more easily to be able to derive meaning from this, and in particular, derive meaning in the aggregate. I mean, we are not looking to see what, you know, someone's cat and, you know, was doing on any one given day. That's not the kind of thing that we think this data will be used for. It will be used for serious research and scholarly purposes to derive meaning and to help build the historical, cultural, and social record of our country.
The Library of Congress was one of the first government organizations to be on Twitter, and you also are an active user of this service, in addition to now housing its archives. How does that help you meet your mission?
Well, what I like to tell people is possibly more than any federal agency, or certainly the vast majority of them, we are all about content. We have collections, we have programs, we have services. You know, we are the Copyright Office of the United States, so anything that people want to protect in terms of their own creativity comes through here. So having all of that, we want to ensure that people know about all of this, that's accessible to them. We are a public institution. Yes, we are Congress's library, but we are also the nation's library. So for us, it's crucial to get out the word when we get a new collection here that would be very useful to people, or when we are doing an exhibit that can help enlighten and inspire people, or, you know, even something as I don't want to say simple, but we have many concerts here and poetry readings and lectures and just the list goes on and on. So we have many constituencies that we serve. We want to find people where they are and not necessarily expect them to find us.
And I know part of the challenge of all this is keeping this in a form that will still exist in 10, 20, 40, 60, 100 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of our strategies has been, we say, to fish where the fish are. So the first social media sites that we have forayed into have been the most popular ones. So, for instance, our first effort with video was both in iTunes U and in YouTube. And Facebook was the first one in terms of person-to-person social media, of course, Twitter, our blog and a Flickr for photographs, which has been highly successful. So, you know, we have been very aggressive in moving into this area and really applying a business case to this, where it makes sense for the library and how we can best engage people where they are and where they're expecting to find their information today.